Good afternoon. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 9th of January, and this is a Juno afternoon. Our guest today includes C.N. Murphy with details about this year's Poetry Omnibus program. Andy Hirsch from the Juno Public Libraries will be talking about the Discover Technology exhibit that's coming to town. Mari Carpinetti will be here from the Juno Bar Association to talk about next week's free Dr. King Day legal clinics, and we're going to hear about the Orpheus Project with Todd Hunt and Katie Gorgio. That bird note and more, of course, here on Juno Afternoon. So stay tuned for that after National Native News.
This is Bird Note. It's small consolation to those of us shoveling the stuff, but snow is a great insulator. Light, fluffy snow can be up to 90% trapped air. Just the thing to keep bears and ground squirrels and other hibernating mammals warm. And birds, too. Ptarmigan, those small Arctic grouse that molt into a white plumage each autumn, spend their long winter nights in cozy caves they excavate in snow. At dusk, they dig an entrance, then bulldoze their way beneath the surface to hollow out a well-insulated sleeping chamber. In truly harsh weather, they'll hunker down in their caves through the short Arctic day, too. Common redpolls move south to escape the Arctic winter, but even then, their wintering grounds in southern Canada and the northern U.S. can be snowy. These tiny, goldfinch-like birds with the bright red cap break through the snow with their heads, then burrow horizontally for up to a foot and a half. Come morning, when the sunshine warms the air, they pop out of the roosting cave, leaving the smooth blanket of snow pocked with red pole-sized craters. Something to look for next time you're out in your down parka with a thermos of hot chocolate. For Bird Note, I'm Mary McCann. Support for Bird Note comes from Bloomsbury, announcing the new book Winter Birds with paintings by artist and ornithologist Lars Johnson, available wherever books are sold.
And that was not National Native News, just a test to see if you're listening. That was Bird Note. We'll get to National Native News in a moment, but we're not going to delay our conversation with C.N. Murphy to learn about Poetry Omnibus. Welcome to a Juno Afternoon, C.N.
Thank you, Ben.
And, Poetry Omnibus. Some people may know what it is, some people don't. So go ahead and tell our listeners, please.
So this is going to be its 11th year in existence, and it is an opportunity for local poets to enter this contest. And if you are selected, you'll have a poem up on Capital Transit buses for 1 year. And it's open for adults and youth alike.
And who sponsors this program?
Okay, this is sponsored by the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, Printing Trade, the Juno Public Libraries, and Capital Transit.
Great, so it takes the community to get that poetry out there on the streets. How many years has this program been going on?
So this is the 11th year, and it started in 2016. And you had a little history,
2006. Yes, I'm doing
numbers.
The math. Yes, Robin Holloway used to live here in Juneau, and she was a former member of the Alaska State Council on the Arts, a colleague of mine. And she was really involved, I think, in the program in its infancy.
Yeah. So it's continued through the generous time and efforts of local writers and artists throughout. Past 11 years.
And now you mentioned that there's no age restriction. So what is the range, if you know, of the age of poets who have had their poems selected in the past 11 years?
Well, there's a little age restriction. We do ask youth is the ages of 8 through 17.
Okay.
So we had a big group of third graders submit poems a couple years ago, and it was so much fun. So, 8 through 17 is the youth, and adult is 18 and up.
18 and up. There's no upper maximum.
No.
Okay.
No.
Good.
Anyone as many poems as you want, up to 3 poems. Sorry. And there is a entry fee for anyone that wants to submit more than one poem, and the proceeds go to the Juno Arts and Humanities Council. and it's $3 per pound.
All right, so it's not too onerous. And in the interest of full disclosure, I am an employee of the Juno Arts and Humanities Council, so just in case anyone was wondering about that. So how do people go about submitting these poems? Is it an online process, or can it be done the old-fashioned way with a parchment and a quill pen?
Well, we're all online now, so it's really easy. You just go to junopoets.wordpress.com. And it has the history and information about the program, and there's a little entry form, and all you have to do is type in your information and hit enter, and I will receive the poems.
When's the deadline?
So the deadline is January 31st, and we're having a couple of youth workshops this year, which is really exciting to get more youth involved in poetry. Emily Wall will be having a workshop Wednesday, January 17th at the Douglas Library. That's from 5:30 to 7. And then Christy Nami Erickson will be having a workshop Saturday, January 20th at the Downtown Library, and that's going to be from 3 o'clock to 4:30. So we're going to invite parents and kids to come and learn about writing poetry or improve their writing skills. And then they could submit their newly found poetry skills to the program.
And is pre-registration required for either of those workshops?
Nope. Just show up, and we'll have pencils and paper and computers there if you want to submit your poems. So.
Excellent. How did you get involved with the Poetry Omnibus program?
I was asked to be a judge about 3 years ago, and I had so much fun. Carol Race was facilitating the program at the time, and she retired, and I went ahead and took over, and I've been enjoying doing this tremendously. It's a good community effort.
Excellent. And so I was going to ask you about the judging process as well. How many judges are there?
Oh, so there's two adult judges, and this year's judges are Ann Sutton and Emily Wall. And the youth judges will be Amy Penny and Emily Willauer, and so they're all ready to receive lots of poems to review. So,
and you enjoy being a judge. You know, that sort of thing can be a lot of work, because often you'll get really, really similarly good pieces, and it's kind of hard to pick one as being better than the other.
It is kind of hard to be neutral, but at the same time, it's great. You get to read all this exciting poetry by local writers. So.
Have there been any poets who have been chosen in multiple years?
There are people that do get chosen every year. They write excellent poetry. And I do have a couple poems that I brought, if we have time.
But we do.
So the whole premise of the Poetry Omnibus, it's 10 lines or less. And there is a 60-character limit per line. So that's the complexity, is that you have to be really concise and keep your poem to a specific limit. Beatrice Franklin, she has had some of her works up several years now. I'll read a poem by her titled Embracing Winter. Grasp winter like the handle of your sharpest knife. Cut bitter rind from an orange, rain powdered sugar on the plate, and smile you don't have to shovel it. Add two bright cherries, grateful you're not the magpie who's combed the woods all afternoon for any cranberries missed by pickers.
That is a great poem, and it's very appropriate on a day like this where we have little choice but to embrace winter.
Yeah, and so part of the omnibus program is it's on the buses, and so just a really diverse population of people get exposed to reading poetry. A lot of tourists comment on it, and then, yeah, just people here in our community. So it gives them something fun to contemplate or be introduced to.
Absolutely. And you said you brought a couple of pieces. Is there another one you'd like to share?
Yeah. So here's a sample of a youth entry. This is Life of a Cherry Blossom by A.C. Wall. It will fall off the tree, and it will float and float and float and come down like a parachute. There it waits and waits and waits until a girl comes and picks it up and eats it. That is the life of a cherry blossom.
That's wonderful. And, you know, I don't know if there was sort of a blind taste testing. you might not always be able, you probably usually would not be able to guess which pieces were by young poets and which ones were by the adult poets.
Yep. So that's, and she was, I believe, in third grade when that was written. So it's fantastic that there's just so many wonderful poets in this town.
It is. Well, C.N. Murphy, thank you so much. The program is Poetry Omnibus, and one more time, the website where people can go and learn more and submit poems if they're so inclined.
JunoPoets.wordpress.com.
Very good. Thank you so much, C.N.
Thank you, Ben.
Best wishes for a good 2018. And now, listeners, with no further ado, National Native News.
With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes in for Antonia Gonzalez. Three South Dakota tribes are suing drug makers and distributors over what they say are the devastating perils of opioid addiction. The Rosebud and Flandreau Santee Sioux tribes and the Sisseton Wahpeton Oyate say the 24 defendants perpetrated fraud, deceptive marketing practices, and racketeering violations. The tribes are among dozens of states, municipalities, and at least two other tribes suing drug companies over prescription drug addiction problems at epidemic levels in some places. The tribes mention particular harm to Native American reservations, where they say as many as 1 in 10 residents is addicted to opioids. The lawsuits are being led by two former U.S. attorneys, Tim Burden of North Dakota and Brendan Johnson of South Dakota. The Cherokee Nation filed a similar suit last April in tribal court. The Eastern Band of Cherokee also filed suit against drug companies last week. A New Mexico business professor and member of the Choctaw Nation is entering the race for Congress. Gavin Clarkson first announced his candidacy on Facebook to run for the 2nd Congressional District in southern New Mexico. Clarkson is an associate professor of business at New Mexico State University in Las Cruces. He served in the Trump administration's Bureau of Indian Affairs for 7 months. ProPublica and the Washington Post reported he resigned after a critical report by the Inspector General that showed serious oversight problems in a tribal loan program he managed before taking the BIA position. But Clarkson tells the Las Cruces Sun News he stepped down from the job to run for Congress. He calls the media reports fake news. The seat he's running for is being vacated by Republican Steve Pierce, who is running for governor. Clarkson faces 3 fellow Republican challengers and 6 Democrats for the open seat. The U.S. Supreme Court will not hear the case involving a gambling hall proposal on Martha's Vineyard. The Martha's Vineyard Times reports that paves the way for the Wampanoag tribe of Gayhead to open an electronic bingo hall on tribal lands in the town of Aquinnah. The paper reports the town and the state of Massachusetts fought the plans, saying the tribe is bound by an agreement from 1987 that they would not pursue gambling on the site. The tribe says that agreement is superseded by the Indian Gaming Regulatory Act passed by Congress a year later. The tribe initially pushed for an off-island casino, but the state refused to negotiate that deal. The Navajo Nation has broken ground on 36 modular homes in an area where development has been off-limits for decades. Ryan Heinches reports it's an effort by tribal officials to revive the economy on more than 1.5 million acres known as the former Bennett Freeze.
All construction in the area was halted in 1966 by former Bureau of Indian Affairs Commissioner Robert Bennett. It arose from a land dispute between the Navajo and Hopi tribes and prevented thousands of residents from making even basic repairs and improvements to homes. President Obama lifted the freeze in 2009, but the area still suffers from high unemployment and poverty rates. The tribe allocated $3 million earlier this year for home construction, renovations, and assistance with more than 50 home site leases. In addition, officials with the tribe used Google Maps to plot proposed locations for growth. Navajo President Russell Begay says the tribe is making up for past wrongs imposed by the federal government and hopes to continue developing infrastructure in the area. For National Native News, I'm Ryan Heinches in Flagstaff, Arizona.
The Winnebago tribe of Nebraska is in the midst of a sacred fire ceremony during the month of January. Siouxland News TV reports the time of continuous prayer around a fire kept burning 24 hours a day is aimed at building a unified and strong understanding among all communities. The ceremony is also designed to reflect on setbacks like domestic violence, drug and alcohol abuse, and murdered indigenous women. The ceremony is open to the public. With National Native News, I'm Art Hughes.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios by Kwanic Broadcast Corporation. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, with support from the Public Radio Satellite Service.
Support by Drumbeat Indian Arts, offering authentic Native American recordings and religious herbs, craft supplies, books, and a wide selection of Pendleton blankets at drumbeatindianarts.com. Valentine's delivery on orders placed by February 1st. Support for Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation comes from the Montana State University in Bozeman, offering an on-campus master's and online graduate certificate in Native American Studies. More info can be found at montana.edu/Native American.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Network.
Join the Jack and KTOO for January's Art Glasses with Frost and Fur creator Jessica Hanlon. Jessica will lead participants in designing and hand-painting tea towels, with each participant taking home two towels. The towels are unbleached, 100% cotton, made in the U.S. January 11th from 5:30 to 7:30 p.m. at the Hangar Ballroom. All supplies are included, no host bar, and food available for purchase. Tickets at KTOO, the Jack, and JAHC.org.
It is 16 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 9th of January. This is a Juneau afternoon. And apropos of that last PSA, I think there's only a couple of tickets left for that art classes. So if you're interested, you should hasten down to the Jack and get them as soon as possible. Our next guests today are Andy Hirsch and Beth Weigel from Juneau Public Libraries. Welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Thanks.
Thank you.
And we're going to talk about an exciting exhibit that is just opening tomorrow. It's being installed. The finishing touches are being put on it today. Discover Tech.
That's right. Discover Tech. Engineers make a world of difference.
Excellent. So this exhibit didn't just happen overnight. This has been a long time coming. Tell us a little bit about the origins of the exhibit.
Great. So back in 2015, the American Library Association kind of sent out an email saying, hey, we're going to have some traveling exhibits. Who wants in? And the Juneau Public Library looked at that, and then we went around to a bunch of people in the community, and we said, is this something that you would all be interested in? And everybody was really enthusiastic. We got about 16 letters of support from various entities, from engineering groups, from groups that work with kids, from science groups that wanted more
hands-on
STEM education in Juneau, and we were awarded this traveling exhibit. And tomorrow is the day that it is available in Juneau.
And it's really quite remarkable because we're one of eight libraries in the nation to get this traveling exhibit. It's museum quality, and it's going to be an excellent addition for the next few months to our community.
Well, that's reassuring, but it's not surprising. As we all know, Juneau is disproportionately arts-rich and culturally rich. In fact, you may have heard about the Creative Vitality Index. We're number 6 out of 930 communities in the nation for our artistic and cultural vitality, and this is the perfect example of why we score so high. So it's not all going to be in one room at the library. It's going to be kind of diffused through the facility.
Correct. So the exhibit is actually comprised of 14, 15, 16 different parts, and so it is throughout the entire library. Many of the parts are interactive. There's a lot of different things to do, and some of them are signs, some of them are touch tables, and some of them are physically manipulating different objects.
Right. So, for example, one of my favorite pieces that's very interactive is an arch building activity. And so there's a table that the board is laid down on, and you have these kind of like rubber blocks that are numbered in the shape of an arch, and you seat them into a spot, and then you build your arch flat, and then this tips up. The table tips up, and then if your arch is in there right and you've got your keystone in right, it will, then you can lay back the back part and the arch will stand on its own. So that's pretty fun. And
that made it work.
I actually did get it to work.
I haven't been able to get it to stay. I'm just not detail-oriented enough.
And you were both just testing it out, making sure it was
right.
Safe for the young people.
Making sure all the parts were there.
Yep. Absolutely.
Yep. And then another really fun interactive piece, I think, will be it's a large wall, and it has to do with water filtration and how clean water is important and how that happens and how you might engineer something to help filter your water. And so there's a wall that magnets will stick to. And so there's lots of pieces like, you know, like rain gutters and different little shelves and different little things that you'll put into different places to create your filtration system, and then you can run a ball through it and see how that goes, and of course there's information on a panel next to it. So that's that I think will be very fun. There's a circuit building, they call it the Inventor's Lab, I think, and three different seats around a round table, and there's a grid where you can use these snap circuits, and it's like building with Legos, but you're building with circuits, so you can create a circuit project that might make a sound or might light up a light or things like that. So it's got all these different pieces that you use for circuit building and electrical engineering.
And Andy, when you were on last week.
I was.
I said, well, there's so much, it sounds like, that are parts of this exhibit. People might want to do a little homework before they go so they just know what they're going to be looking at. And you said there maybe was an online resource?
Yes. Yeah, so the name of the exhibit is Discover Tech Engineers Make a World of Difference. And it's put together by a nonprofit called StarNet. And if you go to their website, and you can just Google Discover Tech or Google StarNet, whatever works for you. There's actually a web page, and it has photos of the various exhibits and talks about the different interactives. But I will say, you could just come to the Mendenhall Valley Public Library, and you don't have to do the whole exhibit at once.
Okay, so it's not too overwhelming.
I think it's fine. And if you can always come back to the library.
Right. Like the other day, we there's also a table that we put in the children's area, and there's all these little building planks called Kiva planks and some plastic gear things that and as soon as we had it up and had the planks on there, the kids spent the whole day Saturday and Sunday just hanging out doing that. So it's going to be able to engage people of all ages in a variety of ways. So
it's kind of like the Louvre. You can't do it all in one day. And if you do try, you're going to hurt your head.
Well, we're hoping to get it a lot of the kids through class visits with the school buses. So we're going to bring in all the elementary school classes, and they're actually going to do it all in one day or even less than a day.
But that'll be their little sampler moment.
Exactly.
And then they'll be free to come back with their families, with their friends. And the exhibit's up through the 6th of April. So there is a lot of time to go and enjoy this resource.
Right.
One of the things I'm most excited that we're doing with the school visits is not just touring the exhibit. We're also doing a hands-on STEM-based activity with them. So with the grades 3 through 5, we're doing water filtration. So we're going to make dirty water, and the kids are going to have different materials that they will test and try and find the best method to make the dirty water as clean as they can. So it's the whole engineering method. Think about it.
Test it.
Talk,
do it again.
Talk about what went well, what didn't go well.
Do it again.
And not just at the museum while they're there, but I'm sure most teachers are going to incorporate this into their curricula for this term, and they're going to learn a little bit more about it. Like I said, do some homework before they go, and then discuss it when they get back in class, and then, yes, it will be on the final exam.
Well,
one of the other things we want to give a call out to as well is we want to know what some of the engineers in our community do. There's one whole display that allows us to feature engineers in our community and the jobs that they do, and so we're super excited about that. So if you are an engineer in our community, we'd love to hear from you. You can email Andy or I at the library, just even by using our reference at juno.org email.
Very good. And so, yeah, the Juno, obviously the public libraries are part of our city and borough government, and juno.org/library, I think, isn't it?
That's our website, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also where you find the museum, in case people get confused about that sometimes, but it's not that confusing. Well, so it's called Discover Tech, Engineers Make a World of Difference, and it's going to be up for a long time, but there's no reason to wait. People can go out there. They could go today, but by tomorrow, everything's going to be open with all the bells and whistles ready to be enjoyed.
We hope so.
And we just want to say thank you to the different organizations that helped us, particularly the Friends of the Juno Public Library, School District, some of the civil engineers out there, the Society of Civil Engineers, the Juno STEM Coalition, Juno Economic Development Council. The Juno Community Foundation is helping pay for the buses for the students to come to the class. And we have others to thank as well, but come by the library and you'll see that. Thank you there, and we'll be very excited for all the kids to come through and just test everything and tell us what's working and what's not working, because we can make it all work if we all work together.
And there's probably a pretty good some method set up so people can provide feedback.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
And then I'd also like to just extend an invitation to everyone. We're doing an opening reception this Saturday, and that's Saturday the Saturday the 13th. I'm great with dates here. Saturday the 13th at the Mendenhall Valley Public Library. It starts at 2 o'clock, and we'll have some snacks. We'll talk as briefly as we humanly can, and then we hope people will enjoy the exhibit. And at 2:30 on Saturday, we're going to do a Lego building challenge. And so we have bins and bins of Legos that we hope people will come and build and test and explore and do it again.
Excellent. So it's Discover Tech, Engineers Make a World of Difference, opening tomorrow, opening reception this Saturday.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you, Andy Hirsch and Beth Weigel, for all that you do with the Juneau Public Libraries and for being on a Juneau Afternoon. Anything else that I've missed before we go?
Just keep an eye on our calendar, which you can find on the website or our Facebook page, because like Andy said, there'll be some other programs that come up. We'll have some Science Fridays around this and a Science on Screen and things like that. So lots of programming to go along with it.
And this is for kids of all ages.
Exactly.
And adults.
And adults of all ages. Thank you very much, Andy and Beth.
All right. Thank you.
Yep. Thank you. And that was Shenandoah Stillness, National Park Soundscapes by Jill Haley. Here on a Juno afternoon, it's almost 30 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today's Tuesday, the 9th of January, and our guests now are Eric Vang and Mariana Carpinetti from Alaska Legal Services Corporation and the Alaska Department of Law. But you're here on behalf of the Juno Bar Association and the Alaska Bar Association, which is once again sponsoring the Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day of Service. So Mari and Eric, welcome to a Juno afternoon.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
So people know a little bit about this, probably from prior years, but let's just start at the very beginning and explain what the concept of a day of legal service is.
This is really our one day where, of course, our purpose in the legal profession is to be able to give people better information to so they can make better choices. And the goal of the MLK Day is really for us to lower that bar as much as we can. So really all you got to do is show up with your questions and papers, and we'll get you some more information and get you on your way.
But we always have the disclaimer, the attorneys who volunteer next Monday are not going to be entering into an attorney-client relationship in the formal legal sense of that term. It's more of an informal advice context, but it can lead to someone getting a pro bono attorney or a more formal level of representation.
Yeah, the main goal was really just to be like, let's help understand your problem. Let's give you some next steps for your problem, next places to go. Maybe check out this form, look at this way. Maybe check out this website or check out this library. Maybe you really should go find an attorney and talk about with this. Certainly what happens there isn't going to be getting ready to go into court unless that's what your specific problem is and you want advice on it. It's really about giving you some more information so that you're better prepared.
Right. And now, how many years has the Juno Bar been helping participating in this program?
I want to say that this is our fifth. It's been a while. It's becoming a firm tradition.
That sounds about right to me. I'm not remembering the exact amount of time either. I volunteer for the Network on Domestic Violence and Sexual Assault, and it's very similar. There's a hotline twice a month where people call, and they don't get an attorney per se, but they just get some direction, some pointing in the right direction. And one thing that often comes up in those calls is the Family Law Self-Help Center. People are not aware that there's a pretty good online resource provided by the Alaska court system that really tries to demystify things when people have family law problems that they need to solve. And so I think even if you just show people that website when they come in for a consult like this, you could be moving them several steps ahead in the game.
Sure. And, you know, one of the things is, you know, for many people, they will only need an attorney a few times in their life. Maybe a loved one in their family dies and they're dealing with an estate in probate, or there's a divorce and they're trying to figure out a child custody arrangement. And so for a lot of people, you know, they don't have regular contact with the legal system, and it can be pretty overwhelming. And, you know, the other thing is that this day is so great. We really love it because there's no minimum income requirements. Alaska Legal Services provides absolutely critical services, but they have to limit who their clients are. And a lot of times there's people in the middle who are middle class and who make a decent wage, but they still don't have $5,000 or $10,000 or $15,000 that to just go hire an attorney off, you know, they have a problem and, oh, I can just go step into an attorney's office and hire them. So we really encourage everyone to come to these to this clinic, you know, regardless of what your financial situation is. And like Eric said, it's not like we're necessarily agreeing that this will go on for the long term, but we can point you in the direction that you need to go.
Right. It's certainly a step forward from just sitting there and fretting about your legal problems and not knowing what to do next. Because that often can just be one of the hardest questions for someone to answer.
And as a follow-up to that, like, is my question legal or not? Well, this is a great time to find out. If you're not sure, you've got a letter and you don't know what it means, or something from Social Security, or I don't know something, which happens, this is a great time to bring it by and find out, because we can tell you, it is or is not. You should go talk to this person next, or here's how you appeal that decision, and then you'll just won't have to worry about it anymore, and you'll know what your next step is.
And there are also, you know, within government and society, other processes that people may not realize, like wage and hour, you know, for example. People don't need to go hire an attorney if they feel like they've not been adequately paid by an employer. We have a wage and hour act that's pretty strong, and if people just know about that, they can do a lot to help themselves remedy a situation, and it's just knowing that the help is out there.
Yeah, but people who understand the systems who can help you get some resources that may not be legal and may well be free, absolutely.
Yeah, and it really is, I mean, we get attorneys, this community, the legal community in this town is so great. They're so supportive. And one question we get from attorneys is they say they want to help, but they're worried because they're not an expert in Social Security law or disability benefits. And what Eric and I tell people is you don't have to have a specialty. You just have to be a problem solver. And generally, that's a strength that attorneys have. They're good problem solvers, and they understand systems. And so, like Eric said, a lot of times, sometimes maybe the question isn't even a legal question. But if you talk to a lawyer about it, they can tell you that.
Right. What sorts of areas of legal or issues have come up over the years? Obviously, we've mentioned family law, contract disputes, landlord-tenant. What other sorts of things that people who are listening might think, hey, I've got a problem that falls in that category?
A common one would be public benefits issues, Medicaid eligibility, Social Security benefits being changed in a letter, public assistance applications. Of common other areas, again, as Mari mentioned, the death of a loved one can trigger a confusing and difficult process that can be really great to have some direction on. But really, I mean, ultimately, the law stuff is really any time that you have to interact with rules and bureaucracy. I encourage you, I would be happy to make off a big list, and I hope that prompts people to say, oh, yeah, I did have that thing I wanted to talk about. But I don't want people to feel by giving that list that I'm limiting them, because really this is a one time where you don't have to have it categorized. Like, we can figure that out for you.
And, you know, last year we had a family come in, and they had a really interesting issue that had to do with a native allotment and how it had been parceled out. And we had a fabulous attorney, Lael Harrison from Faulkner Banfield, who sat down and spent like an hour and a half going through the recorder's office and looking up titles. And I mean, it was a really kind of hard problem even to wrap your head around. And she did just a phenomenal job. So we have great attorneys, and they're excited to help people.
And there are a lot. I mean, many, many attorneys
absolutely
are volunteering for this.
We can't guarantee, especially, but sometimes we've had somebody come up with a question, and we have had the person in the room who knew that answer better than anyone else in town and who could just give it to them, and that was pretty cool.
Absolutely. So for listeners' benefit, there are two venues for this taking place next Monday. Mari, do you want to tell us about that?
Sure, absolutely. So there's a morning clinic and an afternoon clinic. The morning clinic is at Alaska Legal Services offices. It's the second floor of the Jordan Creek Mall. That clinic will go from 9 a.m. to 12 p.m., and the afternoon clinic will be from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m. at the Diamond Courthouse downtown, just across the street from the Capitol. And it'll just be on you'll just come into the main floor, and we'll have refreshments and coffee, and there'll be volunteers to help you fill out a brief form so we can get an idea of what direction we need to point you, and then we will set you up with a consultation with an attorney.
Excellent. And this is, of course, all confidential. People don't have to worry about there being any record of the questions they asked or anything like that.
Absolutely.
That's one thing, even though it's not a formal attorney-client relationship, the confidentiality provisions that would attach are definitely going
to
be in place.
You're still talking to an attorney, absolutely.
Very good. So it's the Martin Luther King Day of Service, and this actually is something that Juno participates in, but it goes on statewide thanks to the Alaska Bar Association's pro bono program.
That's correct, and I should say the Juno Bar helps to organize it, and Alaska Legal Services provides space and expertise, but we also are really indebted to the Alaska court system for providing the Diamond Courthouse and also to the Alaska Bar Association. They help out with getting the word out and flyers and all sorts of stuff, so it's a very collaborative effort.
And the court system mention is important because obviously Dr. King Day is a state holiday, so the courthouse wouldn't be open usually, and so some people who work there obviously have to not take the day off to allow the attorneys to come in and volunteer.
Yes, we're very grateful to everyone in the community, and there's lots of players who help make this happen.
Very good. So it's the Martin Luther King Day of Service. It's next Monday. It's out of Jordan Creek Center in the morning, at the courthouse in the afternoon. Eric and Mari, anything else you'd like to share with our listeners on a Juno afternoon?
No, thanks so much. And I hope. And I guess one thing I would add, if you have anybody you're concerned about, please pass it along to someone else. You never know who might have a problem in the back. And the more people that hear about it say, oh, yeah, that thing is happening, then the better chance to get that problem solved.
Exactly. Okay, very good. Thank you both very much. And I hope you have a great turnout next Monday.
Thanks,
thank
Ben.
You very much, Ben.
Let me ride. Join us for the KTOO and Taku Fisheries Seafood Festival on Saturday, February 3rd at Centennial Hall, a culinary celebration of all we love in Juneau. Your favorite restaurants will be showing off their seafood creations furnished by Hook Seafood and Taku Fisheries. To satisfy your sweet tooth, Koper, Glacial Grinds, and Heritage Coffee Roasting Company will serve desserts. The event will be kicked off with a beer tasting by Alaskan Brewing Company with limited seats. Tickets at kto.org. This event is made possible with support from the Alaska Seafood Marketing Institute and Pacific Seafood Processors Association.
It's 42 minutes after the hour. I'm Ben Brown. Today is Tuesday, the 9th of January, and I have Katie Giorgio and Todd Hunt from the Orpheus Project, formerly known as Opera to Go.
Mm-hmm.
Welcome to a Juneau afternoon.
Oh, thanks, Ben.
Hey, Ben.
So, the Orpheus Project, it sounds like descending to the underworld. Tell us more about it.
Well, the as you mentioned, the Orpheus Project is formally called Opera to Go. And as we were going through some changes in sort of what we did, mostly discovering that we do more than just opera, we're looking for a name that was a little bit more open to that. And Orpheus, of course, being the mythological persona who plays and sings so well that he can, you know, charm demons and all that kind of stuff. So it's like, oh, that's perfect, because that's basically what we do here on Earth.
Exactly. Hey, set the bar high. If you can charm demons, you can do anything else, solve all the problems in the world.
That's right.
So what's the Orpheus Project currently working on?
Well, Friday night we're throwing a toga party at the Jack, and I play trombone and gamble in the high cost of living, and it's one of the great joys of my own musical experience here in Juneau, because if you guys have seen us, and many of you have, it's just really fun, and we play great music and tunes that everyone knows, and I've been thinking for a while a great thing for that band to do would to play a Animal House style toga party, because a lot of the music that we play was featured in that movie, and I just love it so much. So there, you know, there's this great, if you haven't seen Animal House, it's a college in the 60s and the fraternities and the sororities on campus, and this one particular fraternity is sort of full of the losers, and they get terrible grades and they're up to no good all the time, and they're sort of on the brink of being kicked off campus, so they decide that the only reasonable thing to do is to throw a toga party. And so yeah, that just has been in the back of my head for a while.
There's so many similarities.
And being a part of Orpheus Project and looking always for new and fun ways to throw fundraising events, I thought, hey, let's get this all together and just have some fun and raise some money for Orpheus.
Well, I think it's an outstanding idea. I was there at the Jack on New Year's Eve, and
yes, I saw you.
Katie, your band
were
playing.
You were cutting the rug.
It was a really, really great concert, and the gamble and the high cost of living have just really come together and really have a really strong, wonderful sound. So just personal testimonial, I will be there this Friday night, and I would strongly encourage everyone listening to be there as well.
Yes, and wear a toga, right?
Yes, well, of course. I mean, if you go to a toga party and you're not in a toga, I don't even know how that works.
Yeah, it's kind of sad. And there's benefits for wearing a toga, right?
That's right. If you come in a toga, you will receive one free drink of your choosing.
Excellent. That's always a good start.
And also, we're going to have prizes for particularly good togas. So, mm-hmm. You know, it's fine to just wear a sheet, but if you want to put a little extra effort into it, there might be something in there for you.
Yes. I was going to ask, who's going to be the judge of the toga contest?
Ooh, so we have your favorite sisters from KXLL. They have a show on Tuesday. You can tune in tonight and hear them. And so they'll be judging the toga contest. We also have a limbo contest planned.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, they'll be on hand to help do some of that judging.
Yeah,
very good. And so this is obviously all for a very good cause, the Orpheus Project. Mm-hmm. What is what's coming up on the performance horizon for Orpheus?
So after that, actually about a month after the toga party, we are workshopping the Princess Sophia opera that we have been working on for years now.
Years. And really quickly, I think a lot of listeners know about the tragedy of the Princess Sophia, but just in a nutshell, tell those who don't what actually happened and why it's such an interesting source for a story for an opera.
Sure. The Princess Sophia was a steamship that left Skagway, headed to Juneau and then other ports south, almost exactly 100 years ago on its final voyage. It hit Vanderbilt Reef in the middle of a snowstorm, and the ship was on the rock for like 40 hours, and after that it sank, and the rescue boats couldn't get there, and nobody could be saved, and everyone died.
But unlike the Titanic or the Lusitania, it wasn't immediately apparent that it was going to be a tragedy. People thought, okay, we hit a reef.
Right.
Someone's going to fix it.
Yeah.
Let's have dinner.
It was relatively stable.
And people just kind of hung out on the boats and didn't freak out and try to get off. And then when the storm got worse, it was too late. And then that's what really kind of made it a surprise tragedy.
Right, exactly. So, and I hate to say it, but it is kind of the perfect opera story. So
it's operatic.
And we're looking to do the premiere right on the 100th anniversary. So this workshop is taking the music and words of Emerson Eads and Dave Hunsaker, who wrote the music and text respectively, and basically work through all of the music with the singers and an orchestra and sort of give them a chance to see how it flows, how things work. The singers can give feedback. And at the end of that, we're going to do a small concert with the singers and piano of excerpts, maybe 45 minutes worth of the two-hour opera. And so that would be on March 17th, which is a Saturday.
Okay. Yeah. And where's that going to be?
It's
planned at the SLAM right now. We're still working out a few details.
Yeah, okay. I wasn't totally sure if that was finalized yet. But that's probably finalized.
That's
probably where it's at.
And the plan is to have a full production later this year.
Right, yeah. Late October is what we're looking at. So that will be super exciting, and you will definitely hear all about it because we're pushing it basically every opportunity we can. So thanks for bringing that up.
Absolutely. Well, I think it's just interesting to think that, you know, you can go to a toga party this Friday that will lead to a workshop in March that will ultimately lead to a full production this fall. And then who knows, once it's a piece that's all done and in the can, it certainly is going to be of interest to other communities.
I think so. Yeah, that's definitely the idea, and we're looking to take it out as much as possible, and we're even actively looking at venues in Canada, because the Sophia was a Canadian ship, and so there's a lot of interest in there, especially Whitehorse and Vancouver are two communities that we're looking at doing it in.
And I am sure there's probably someone listening now, and certainly quite a few people out there that are descendants of the people who were tragically lost. And so anyone who has a personal, historical, familial interest in it, I think, I just think it's going to be appealing to a wide cross-section of opera lovers and people who maybe don't even know they love opera.
Right, exactly. Yes. Yeah, good point.
Well, we always want to bring more people into the operatic fold. So this is not the only thing that the Orpheus Project is working on. So Todd, what else can you share?
Yeah, so we've got, so that was March, and in April, we are doing the first annual, what I'd like to say would be annual, concert of early music and new music put together that we're calling Continuum. So this year we've mixing and mashing together music of the late 14th century along with stuff that's, you know, just been written in the last, say, 10 years. So that is a super interesting project that we're working on as well.
I'm just having a little Glee flashback there with that mashup concept.
So that's the end of April, the 21st and 22nd of April at the Egan Library at UAS, and on for the Sunday performance at Northern Light.
Outstanding.
Yeah.
If listeners want to familiarize themselves a little more with the Orpheus Project, what is the online availability for information?
We've got our website. That's maybe the most up-to-date thing, generally speaking, and that is orpheusproject.org.
And we also have a Facebook page, so you can come like us on there. And we have information about, a lot of information about the Sophia Project, our concerts, and, of course, the Toga Party. And there's also a link on the website and on Facebook to Vendini, if you would like to buy your tickets early. You can save like $5 if you buy early.
Huge.
So, yeah, it's huge.
I work at the Jack now, and I was manning the front desk yesterday. It's actually more than that, I think. It's a substantial price break if you buy your tickets in advance. And if you go buy them in person at the Jack, you're not going to pay the additional service fees.
Right.
So I'm just shamelessly encouraging people to go to Jack and buy their tickets. But, of course, I think it's probably going to be a pretty good crowd. Anyone who knows Gamble and the High Cost of Living knows that it's going to be a really fun party. And, again, that's this Friday. What time does it start?
8 o'clock.
Yeah.
And doors open at?
At 8 o'clock.
Oh, 8 o'clock. Okay.
I think that's the plan. Yeah.
All right. I wasn't sure.
Yeah. And it will be going until about 11 o'clock.
Very good. Okay. So a great way to kick off the weekend and a great way to help the Orpheus Project mm-hmm. continue preparing this world premiere of The Princess Sophia.
Yeah.
Very good. Katie, anything else you want to share with our listeners?
Oh, I just want to mention, I just want to thank Alaska Brewery Company. They're giving us a donation of beer. You can't have a toga party without beer. So I just want to thank them for sponsoring us.
You know, and that's one thing I thought about a moment ago when you mentioned kind of the genesis of the toga party in Animal House. After the toga party, then the next thing they do is a road trip. So is there going to be a road trip fundraiser sometime? And I just had that occurred to me.
Oh, there we go. All right. We'll start planning right away.
Okay. Those on the fundraising committee for Orpheus Project, road trip idea.
Figure it out.
Yes.
We'll figure that out.
We'll go to the end of the road.
We'll go to Whitehorse.
No, right.
I don't know.
Yeah.
Don't tell the Marine Highway System.
Yeah. No.
All right. All right, well, Katie, thank you very much. Todd, anything else you want to share with our listeners?
I think we covered just about everything. Thanks, Ben.
Okay, good. Then we will look forward to seeing you on Friday night. And with that, I'll just say toga.
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 We shall. You know you make me wanna shout, kick my heels up and down, throw my hands up and down, throw my head back and down. Come on now, don't forget to say you will. Don't forget to say yeah, 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 yeah. Say you will. Say it right now, baby. Say you will. Come on, baby, come on. Say you will. Say it better, yeah. Come on now. Say that you love me. Say that you need me. Say that you want me. You wanna please me. Come on now. Say, come on now. Say, come on now.
Say, I still remember.
When you used to be 9 years old. Yeah, yeah. I was a fool for you. From the bottom of my soul. Yes. Now that you've grown up. Grown enough to know. Yeah, yeah. But you wanna leave me. You wanna let me go. I want you to know.
A little bit louder now. 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 A little bit louder now.
Alaskans give because we care. We give to help others. This year, before filling out your permanent fund dividend application, be sure to use the new Pick, Click, Give, Pick tool, which helps identify the causes that speak to you. With the new Pick tool, you can narrow down the choices so your donation goes to the causes you care about most. Make a difference to organizations that need your help in the most effective way possible. Visit us at pickclickgive.org.
And it's a little more than 2 minutes before the hour. I'm Ben Brown, and this has been a Juno Afternoon this Tuesday, the 9th of January, 2018. Tomorrow on a Juno Afternoon, Sally Schlichting will be here to discuss the upcoming Conbrio concerts. And there will be some guests highlighting upcoming activities sponsored by Trail Mix and the Southeast Alaska Land Trust. There will be some details about the fundraising dinner for The Canvas, the artist gallery and studio at Reach. And Midgey Moore will be here with a preview of the Wine Education Series. And also, we'll have an update on things going on up at Eagle Crest. So that's tomorrow, Wednesday, on a Juno Afternoon. The weather forecast for this evening is for partly cloudy conditions and a low around 10 degrees, east winds to 20 miles per hour. It's going to be maybe even colder out in the valley than it is downtown, maybe zero out in the valley. So be cognizant of that, because that cold can affect pets and other things. And it's going to be cold and clear for the rest of the week with more snow falling. Thanks for listening to a Juno Afternoon.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast at 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. We also rebroadcast on translators K276AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K210AM in Gustavus, K220BT in Hoonah, and K210AS, an excursion inlet in Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Cable on digital channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the corporation.